information, and I'm placing some taxation on your teeth. Yeah, but the people didn't buy it. They decided they would fight it and be free. They said this one here's for old King George.
Tonight, Waco, Texas. Waco Tea Party Watch Dogger Radio Show. Glad to have everybody with us tonight. We did start a little late, a little shorter show than what we normally do, but there's a very good reason for that. We didn't have 2 hours worth of stuff to do tonight. So, joining me tonight, as usual, Waco Tea Party President Toby Marie Walker. How are you?
Stunned.
Yeah, why are you stunned?
I don't know why I'm stunned. Nothing should shock me anymore in politics, but it just does.
Of course.
So, yeah. So, tonight, you know, it's a new session in politics in Texas.
You are in Texas, last week, yes.
Yeah, start of a new session today. And yeah. Last week was the beginning of last week was the beginning of the session up in D.C.,
mm-hmm.
And so we're going to talk about these new sessions and things that are coming out. And I thought that we could kind of do a little bit of the do's and don'ts of political activity for citizens.
Oh, cool. I like do's and don'ts. Because I need somebody to direct me occasionally on how to handle things properly. So if you tell me what I should do and what I shouldn't do, then I can do my part.
Well, you know, I'm not an expert.
But you have experience.
I have some experience. I can tell you what works and doesn't work. And for us, for me personally, you know, I don't know what to say to some of the things I have read today.
Well, like you said earlier, I mean, and I don't know in particular what you're talking about, but it should come as a surprise anything you read anymore. I mean, I get to the point to where I'm kind of numb by the whole thing. I read something and I say, oh, well, it was bound to happen, I'm sure, you know. Anything in particular that really just got you going tonight?
Well, yeah. So today was the beginning of the session. And
yes.
A lot of people from a lot of different political ideology descended upon the Texas Capitol. Now, I've been there in the past. I had planned on going today. I mean, I had stuff to do at the Capitol all month. But between my husband being sick, me being sick, and then this week, my dog, he has got degenerative disc disease in his back and neck and isn't doing well. And I was afraid to leave him because I can't leave him with anybody because he'll bite them. If they try to give him medicine, he normally doesn't bite people, but you try to shove medicine down his throat and he's not happy. So anyhow, I've been sitting here reading Twitter and Facebook and things that happened today. And apparently there were some interesting things,
mm-hmm.
That were actually, I think, good. And some things not so good. And one of them was that it was, which is interesting, I don't know if it's good or bad, was there was a gun rights group that got a 3D printer and printed a gun at the Capitol today.
Okay.
So interesting. I don't think that's, you know, so much good or bad or whatever, just something interesting. And then there was a gun rights group that, and there's video of this that they're very proud of, and they posted, and it's showing a group of open, it's not Open Carry Texas, it's not them, but some other group that is pushing for permitless, no permits, to carry in Texas. So anybody can carry, because the Second Amendment shall not be infringed. Okay?
Okay.
Great concept. But what they did was went into a Democrat House member's office and then got a little belligerent with him, called him a tyrant against the Constitution. And you can see the video if you go to the Texas Tribune. And then we're just rude, not respectful.
Which we always say is a big no-no. We always say that's a big no-no.
Yeah, it makes you feel better because we've made that mistake. But it makes you feel a little better, but it doesn't. All it does is slam doors, slam windows, it, you know, burns up bridges. And if you're wanting to convince people, you know, to get on your side, the worst thing you want
to
do
is... It's not the way to do it.
No, I mean... And they say, well, we'll primary you. Well, okay, but we've also learned, you know, you better be careful using that kind of language. It, you know, and I always say, why would you warn them?
Yeah, because then they prepare.
Uh-huh. So, anyhow, so the gun women, the moms against gun mom something people, moms against guns against mom, whatever that group is. So they took it and they posted up the video showing it and saying, you know, this is how they're disrespectful. And, you know, you see the comments on various sites, and even on the pro gun sites, they're criticizing them and saying, you know, you've hurt our cause. We're trying to get meaningful legislation passed, and you're going up there and being threatening. And, you know, if you want to sit down and have a dialogue about something, and if you disagree, you walk away. But you never know when some other bill that's for gun rights is going to come up and that they'll agree to help you with, but they're not ever going to open that door again. So, you know, they might not agree with that particular bill, but there might be others down the road, right?
Right. Something close.
Yes. So the representative, Democrat, was not happy with their tactics, so asked them to leave his office, and he was being polite. He was smiling, he was being polite, and then finally he said, you know, I think we're done. You need to leave my office. Then they refused to leave and got belligerent a little, and or a belligerent attitude. And he said, well, it's not your office. This is our office.
What?
No. Like it or not, folks, yes, that is the people's house. That is the people's capital. But they have space in there. And if your elected official asks you to leave, it's best that you just leave because you're not going to win here. You know, so if you're going to refuse, you know, you can go out in the halls. Yeah, you know, the DPS is wonderful about working with activists. You can go out in the hall. You can have signs. You can have a little mini protest in the Texas Capitol, and you can even chant. But in their inner offices where they conduct the state's business, They take calls from constituents. They talk to constituents. They do constituent services. They talk to people about other legislation. You should not disrupt the people's business. So if they ask you to leave their offices, it's just go. And then when somebody walked towards him, you know, it was like, don't touch me, don't touch me. And then if you touch me, it's going to be a bad move, bro. And so it got, they were escalating it instead of de-escalating it. Instead of saying, well, you know what, we disagree. Thanks, have a nice day. Maybe we can talk to you about other legislation in the future. And this way, you haven't slammed a door shut. Now, this is just my opinion on what I would do.
Right.
So, but there are other people who think that's exactly what we should do as citizens, and that we should get belligerent, and that more citizens should get belligerent, because that's how we win.
No.
Well, what do you think?
No, I don't think you win by being belligerent. I think you win by having a good argument, by articulating that argument, and by gaining support from other people. Being belligerent, you're just making a jackass out of yourself, and people don't want to be around you or have anything to do with you. You're certainly not going to listen to you or be motivated by anything you have to say.
Well, a good friend of mine, we were talking about
and
this
and
on Facebook.
I mean, listening to certain politicians speak occasionally. I mean, I'm on C-SPAN when they get up there and they get a little belligerent and forceful and say, well, you know, you don't want to have anything to do with those folks.
And, you know, people, there's one thing to speak the truth and be passionate. There's another to be threatening, rude, and belligerent. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's a fine line. But this is what one friend of mine said about this today. She said, I have seen this disastrous approach in action. Our lawmakers are human beings who respond to arrogance and intimidation like any human being would by turning their backs. And I don't blame them. All it takes is a conversation, civil, professional, respectful conversation, to open a door. All it takes is 60 seconds of someone acting like this for that same door to slam shut. How dare they undo the work of so many quality activists and community leaders?
Mm-hmm.
A staffer that I know was telling me that people were bursting into offices today and being loud and causing a ruckus, and it was ridiculous and unproductive. And believe me, when they find out who you are, when you then call to talk to them about anything, they've got your number. They know who you are. And you're going to hang up with them, and everything you said just went in the trash can because of how you acted then. And you have to rebuild that bridge. And some people say, well, I don't care about that. I'm going to tell them how I feel and be belligerent, and I don't care about working with them or anything. I'm just going to vote them out. Well, if that's your end goal, to just vote them out every time, well, go ahead. But think about this. How many people are you going to get that are willing to run, if that's quality people to run,
mm-hmm.
if they see that's how you treat others? Will they trust you?
We've said this before. How often do you agree with your husband? Do you agree with him 100% of the time? Of course you
no,
don't.
I don't. No.
And if these people find a good quality person to run, somewhere along the line, that quality person is going to do something that the other folks are not going to agree with, because you don't agree with the people 100% of the time. There's going to be some little something that comes up. And like you said, if they see this is how you treat other people, they're not going to want to run either. Now, do we know for sure that these people that are causing the problem, you know how there are some people that go in and pretend to be a certain group to make a certain group look bad, but they really belong to another group?
No, it's really them.
It's really them, huh? Jeez. And then, you know, there's some people that are just stubborn you can't talk to.
I don't know.
Jeez.
So, you know, Felicia, who was a guest on Sunday night, her
mm-hmm.
tip for everyone, so moving on to other, her tip is to study your Alinsky, you know, Rules for Radicals. Is rule number one, step number one. Rules for Radicals Defeated is a good book for people to start with. So it kind of explains it to you and then explains how to defeat it. That's her
Rules
tip.
For Radicals Defeated.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm all, I mean, you know, we like to be bombastic every now and then.
Oh, well, of
but
course.
But we also have learned that if you're
going to
be bombastic, yeah, if you're going to be bombastic, accept the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're willing to accept the consequences, like I know some people who have said that because of how their representative, both in Texas and federally, how they voted means that I've seen a number of things. One, they're going to quit the GOP, they're going to quit the Republican Party, they're going to become independents. And my answer to that is, that's cutting off your nose to spite your face, because then you're leaving to the party, and the party doesn't have much to do with the candidate. I mean, parties here in Texas, they can't keep somebody from running.
Right.
The party is a mechanism to run primary elections and to promote candidates. So if you don't like what the candidate does and you leave the mechanism, then you no longer have a voice inside that mechanism, and you leave it to people who might not even agree with you. So it's kind of winners never quit, quitters never win.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it. Still, you know, same about, you don't have to, if you don't want to be a Republican, don't be a Republican. But if you get mad at one Republican, quitting the whole team, it's kind of like getting mad at a coach on a football team and say, I'm never watching football again. You know, it's kind of, well, that was pointless. So there's that side that I saw. And then I said, well, I will never support them again. I'm not ever voting for them again. I'm never giving them my trust. I've said that about elected officials. That's it. I'm never voting for that person again. But then next go around, I saw what my choices were, and it's like, well, that's worse than what we've got now. I ended up voting for them or skipping the race because there was no one else. So, you know, there's that tactic. I've seen people say, well, I'm done. The only vote I care about is the speaker vote. And if they don't vote my way, I'm just going to go find somebody to run against them. And there's some validity to that. But I warn you that if you want to also work on legislative stuff with your and have your opinions known or respected, telling them that is probably not a good idea. Just go do it. Don't warn them. Why would you warn them? Quit telling them what you're going to do and giving away your game plan. You know? Keep a tally. You know, yourself, talk to your friends and neighbors. But warning them of what you're going to do only marginalizes you. It doesn't marginalize them. So those are the things that I've seen. I've also seen the name-calling, the threats, and just out, you know, ridiculous comments that have been made. One of them being, you know, I mean, there's a guy in up in Ohio that threatened to kill Speaker Boehner by apparently he was going to poison his drink, and he also had a gun that he threatened the speaker, apparently, and police went to investigate. Yeah, that's just not a good idea.
No,
don't threaten to kill
usually.
An elected official.
No.
Yeah, don't threaten to kill anyone. Don't threaten to kill elected officials.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a good idea, do you?
No. I don't think it's a good idea to threaten to kill anyone.
You know, we've all said, I'm going to, you know, like to your kid, I'm going to beat you, but you don't do it. But you don't go on Facebook and do it either.
I'm going to kill you. Yeah, no.
Yeah, I'm going to, do that again, I'm going to kill you. You know, and, a lot of parents have said it. They don't mean it. But you don't go out there and say things like that. And if you do, be careful. I'm telling you, they take this stuff seriously. Don't threaten them with bodily harm. Don't threaten them with their lives. Don't threaten property. It's just not a good game plan. And I can't believe we would have to tell people this. But apparently, there are some people out there that aren't all there. They're not wrapped real tight.
Well, and my understanding is this guy that threatened, was it the speaker or whoever? I mean, he pretty much just turned himself in and said, sure, go ahead, take me away. Hey,
well, no, he was reported, and then they went and investigated. And then he voluntarily gave them his gun and voluntarily went to a mental hospital. And apparently has a lot, not funny, but has a long history of mental illness. So I'm glad that all resolved itself peacefully.
Well, maybe he was just looking for a way to get back in, and that was his...
Yeah, it just isn't...
Cook. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, it's just not helpful.
Well, we have a caller on the line.
Okay.
That's 3 digits, 5399.
Greetings, Toby.
Hey, how are you?
Doing fine. Figured that calling in would be a little bit easier than trying to chat back and forth on Facebook.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you did. And the reason that we were talking about tactics, not about, positions, was what is effective in communicating with your elected official tonight? Because I've been reading stories of some crazy stuff that happened in the Capitol today.
Yes, I saw
some nudity?
A couple different articles.
Yeah, I guess there was some nudity.
That could fit into the issues with the bodily secretions that were carried on by some of the pro-abortion protesters. But
I don't think that's a good tactic either, do you?
I think that should just stay in the privacy of one's own home and move on from there. But
apparently there's and I don't know if this happened today, but somebody was telling me that the Moms Against Guns group, they were, discussing or displaying their opinion, and so they bared their breasts.
Well, first, you've got to question the leadership of a group who chooses an acronym that shortens to MAG, which is also commonly used as gun acronym for magazine. So that's just some poor choices there anyways. But no,
maybe they should have called it MUGS.
Yeah. That certainly fits into shouldn't be used as a political tactic. So my wife and I just bought a house. We just moved into Representative Craig Goldman's district. As soon as we bought the house, I called his office and expressed some interest in the speaker's vote and in some legislation that I knew was going to be filed, Jonathan Sicklin's pro-carry bill. And I was pretty shocked whenever he actually was the person who returned my call. We talked for about 15 minutes, just, bought a new house, how I liked the area, and then the issues that I was concerned about. This morning at about 10 o'clock, I called his local office and his Austin office to encourage him to vote for Scott Turner for speaker. That did not happen. I called after the vote to express my discontent with him not voting for Scott Turner. But I don't have any rapport with Craig Goldman. He's probably heard about my older brother, but personally, for me, there's nothing there. There's no reason why he should take the time to listen to me other than I'm a constituent. There is no history to back up why he should pay any attention at all to me other than, oh, here's some kid who thinks he knows what he's doing about politics. Take, for example, on the other hand, growing up in HD 59 with Sid Miller, our new ag commissioner, as our state house member. I block walked with my family to get him elected and called him, played music at events with him, always was there to support him, and voted for him against J.D. Sheffield, if I can go on the record for that, voted for Sid against Sheffield, and was very glad to vote for him for Ag Commissioner. But with Ag Commissioner Miller, there was a rapport built up. If we called his office, he knew who I was because I actually showed up and did something. And you can't just decide to get indignant and beat your rep over the head for one vote. Might you very severely disagree with that vote? And could the rest of the bills that get voted on be hinged on the speaker's vote? Yes. But there's a lot of work that you have to realize if you burn those bridges can't be done. For example, I want to build a coalition of reps who will sign and help publicize how awesome Representative Stickland's carry bill is, how that will put Texans at the number one spot for firearms liberties in the United States. I want to go and sit down with Representative Goldman and ask him to support this bill, to help make sure it gets out of committee instead of a watered-down bill. But me calling and screaming and saying, I'm going to run against you in the primary, is not going to get that done. With both the U.S. Yes, I can express my discontent. I can say I wish that had not happened. I've attended more events that are pro-Scott Turner than for any candidate other than Senator Cruz in the past 6 years.
And I respect Scott because he ran for the fact that he ran a race. It wasn't a last minute thing. It wasn't he tried to build support. And he was upfront. He was honest about it. He was forthright. And laid out the case. I don't take away from him for what I'm not. We're not denigrating him for his efforts or any of the reps that voted for him. Or, we're not doing that.
You're breaking up a little bit on my end. I don't know if you are on his end or not, but you're kind of breaking up a little bit on my end. Yeah.
I could tell if it was just me either.
Is that better?
Say a few more words.
I'm gonna hang up and call into my cell. I've had problems with my house phone. I'll let Chris continue because he was doing so well.
Okay.
So, go ahead.
Go ahead.
So, this past Sunday, the pastor at the church I attend was talking about Peter. And after there was lots of disappointment with both the U.S. House of Representatives Speaker's election and today the Texas Speaker's election, something that he brought forward to me was, in the sermon, was Peter. He was the first one to step up and take a swing in the Garden of Gethsemane. He cut the ear off, and he was chastised for that. But then he turned around and he denied Jesus three times. But still, he was a strong leader. He changed his tune, for lack of a better term, and he was a good leader in the early church. So it's particularly frustrating with certain reps in the U.S. House of Representatives who voted against Boehner in the caucus back in November and then voted for him on the floor. But there's a difference between a Judas who says all the right things and gets into a position of power and then sells out completely, and a Peter who is going along pretty well and then messes up and then gets back on track.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid that there are some activists who will instantly turn around and get burned bridges with their representatives. Because Craig Goldman has a very high conservative rating as far as the state house goes. And it's, you know, it's very disheartening that he would not vote for Turner for speaker, but I have high hopes to be able to sit down and talk with him and get things done and hopefully have him do some good work.
Yeah, but from what I saw, especially, Turner got, what, 19 votes out of 150?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So there were 19 votes cast for Turner. There were 127 votes cast for Strauss. So, and there were no votes present. There was no one that voted present. So there's a little bit of a discrepancy there. But it would be interesting to see if you took the Democrats who voted for Strauss out, what the ratio was within the Republican caucus.
So, and it goes back to, if you're going to be effective, you take those votes. I mean, if they have a series of bad votes, we know reps that they vote with Democrats. They're Republicans. They vote with Democrats more than Republicans, or they vote against conservative legislation, you know, or they vote for more progressive legislation, however you want to score or talk about it. And if it's a series of events, then, you know, by all means, I can understand where you say, you know, I'm done, and we need to find somebody. At the same time, I caution people of saying that until you find somebody. Because if you don't find somebody who can replace them, who is electable, eligible, you know, all those things, because it can raise money, that, you know, because all these things are important, and that you can get people to vote for them, that are, you know, the voters' discontent is high, be careful doing it because then the ones that you can work on them with, they won't work with you, and now you've marginalized yourself.
Well, there were a great number of voters in HD 59 whenever the Sid Miller's sonogram bill passed, and then the lines for CD 11 and CD 25 were drawn. And there were a lot of folks that became very upset with Representative Miller, now High Commissioner Miller, about how the lines were drawn and thinking that he just wanted to run for Congress. Stephenville got cut in half. There was a big mess. And J.D. Sheffield stepped up to run. He primaried Sid. I voted against, and I was upset about how some of the lines were drawn. I thought that there were some things that Miller could have done to help keep Stephenville in the same congressional district. But the appeal of Sheffield over anyone, and it gets messy because of how he campaigned down in Gainesville, but the Stephenville contingent, there was a large portion of folks I know that were not happy and voted for Sheffield. That being said, it turned around to bite Stephenville and all of District 59 and hurt very badly. Now, these folks can see he's more liberal than some of the Democrats in the House. But the ability to have the grassroots in the district be the one that engage and recruit, and if any groups are going to go in and back a candidate, they need to be very sure to work closely with the grassroots organizations. There was a big grassroots push in CD 25 for Wes Riddle, and he made it into the runoff. But with some investigation, it became very apparent that Wes Riddle was not going to be very good in Congress, and to the point that I can pretty safely say that he would have been way more of a problem and not as productive as Congressman Roger Williams is. I wish Congressman Williams made some different votes, but holding folks accountable and working to find a primary challenger, getting upset and reaching across district lines, that's a big problem, especially with groups. And I happen to work for a group that helps recruit candidates, but my first contact is to try to find who is the local Tea Party or 912 or Patriot activist group there in the area. Because I can be mad at a voting history, but if there's nobody else that's going to be better, getting a candidate and jumping in that's not going to have support, that's not going to be productive.
Well, and we've seen that here. Sorry, but we've seen that here where people have gotten mad at, you know, an elected official here, and outside of our district, they'll come in and they'll say, well, you need the primary. And Chris, you and I have had this talk about, you know, there are some that, yeah, we'd like to see certain elected officials, and this is at all levels, go away. go back to the private sector. But we've also seen where we've had races here where the person who stepped up would be worse than what we had. And we won't name names because I don't want them coming after me because they're Sue happy. But, you know, we kind of knew, we knew who they were. We knew their history. We knew their background. We knew their positions. And they were going to these outside groups, these other tea parties, saying, oh, I'm with you. It's just that we don't like that. I don't like the Tea Party in my district. Well, of course he doesn't, because he knows we know about him. So he sold these other tea parties outside of our district a bill of goods. They jumped on board not knowing what we knew. And we knew he wasn't ever going to win. So it's one of those things of, if you're going to step outside of your district into someone else's, you're exactly right. You've got to talk to them, because even though, you know, we have somebody that you're not 100% happy with, we know kind of the landscape and who the players are and what they've done in the past. And, you know, we have our eye on things that, you know, if we could get this guy to run, that'd be good. But if we have that one run, it would be bad. And every district is different in the geography and the social makeup of the district, the demographics. So you got to look at all of these things, and you're absolutely right. If you can't get a base of support, don't upset their apple cart and make it where it's pitted grassroots against grassroots, because at the end of the day, we're a representative republic, and your district should have some say in who's representing you, not 100% outside. Now, you know, we'd all like to see, I think almost every conservative in the state of Texas would agree that we would like to see a certain representative down in the Houston area who thinks that we have gone to Mars, that NASA has gone to Mars. You know who I'm talking about. We'd like to see her replaced. But the reality is the demographics in her district are never going to – we're wasting a lot of time and money and effort down there. And
we'll
get
to Mars before she
there.
Is replaced. Yeah, we will get to Mars before she is replaced.
Probably. So you have to look at the lay of the land, and I think that's why, you know, Chris, the group, the work that you guys do is so important, is that you do look at the lay of the land. You do see, you know, look at all of the factors, and, you know, you got to be careful. And that's why I respect what you guys do. Now, if you find somebody and say, hey, look at this person in this district, what do you guys think? And we don't even know about them. You know, we're all, you know, we'll jump up and down and say, hey, great. As citizens, not the wake of the Tea Party, we don't endorse or support, and IRS and FEC and TEC can all calm down. But as citizens, you know, we can do that. So, you know, I see both sides where you would want to get rid of them, But you have to also look at is it feasible?
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, and I, getting
go ahead.
To the idea of but what's a positive way to engage, I think that if all you're doing is calling and complaining, that's a bad idea. You've got to be able to call and introduce yourself, ask them to a church picnic, call and ask them, what are the bills that you've introduced? Can we sit down and talk about your legislative goals? And then be able to ask them, what are some bills that you don't know about? Let me go door to door in my neighborhood to try to get a consensus from the folks in my neighborhood. I am a very big cheerleader for the on-the-ground, door-to-door, personal, in-your-neighborhood, precinct, captain, chairman, whatever you want to call it, system. The ability to build personal relationships and feed that information to your representative is important. It's important to the party as a whole. It's important to the conservative cause, and it's important being able to show that you have clout with your constituents. Because if you can show up and say, hey, I talked, 200 people at my church picnic signed and said they want to be able to carry their 1911 on their hip wherever they go, then that's actually a surprisingly large number of people for that representative to get a signed document from. If you just carried a sheet of paper saying, I want, the new vehicle registration and the registration and the inspection sticker, if you got a bunch of folks to sign saying they wanted to go back to, they wanted to stay the way it is instead of switch over March 1st, two of them being combined, if you take the time to actually engage your representative on policy issues and then go and engage your neighborhood, your precinct, about those policy issues and return to your representative, then they know that you're going to get up and do something, which makes you an asset to their campaign.
Yeah, you have to be valuable. And whether it's gaining support for legislation, block walking, phone banking, whatever it is that you're doing, you have to become an asset and a trusted advisor or a trusted, grassroots activist that they know you don't. We have this relationship with quite a few of our elected officials. We don't agree with them 100% of the time. They admit that and we admit that. But at the same time, they will listen to us and have a civil conversation about it. And sometimes it can be, a little uncomfortable for both sides. But
we try to be
effective that way.
I don't even think you have to be necessarily valuable if you just are not obnoxious and take the time to listen, because you don't have to be handing over lots of hard data. You don't have to be handing over checks that you helped raise for them. But if they know that you're going to cause noise, if they know that you have the capability of being a rabble rouser, then they don't want to risk that liability. So, it might be a pat on the head, but if they know that you can make noise and if they know that you're not obnoxious, that makes you something that they could turn into something valuable. So you don't even have to put that much work into it.
No, you don't. it depends on what your goal is. If your goal is to be an advocate for certain legislation or, an issue, a cause, an issue, piece of legislation, whatever it is, and you want to be an advocate for that, say it's school choice, and you can provide them, it's like if they call you up, and we have legislators that do this with us. Hey, do you know anybody to come down and testify on homeschooling or on Common Core or whatever? Because we have such a large community or network, I can say, well, yeah, I know 10 or 12 people, and contact them and say, hey, they're looking for people to go down and testify, especially here in Texas. at the Capitol about homeschooling, about this specific topic. And we can provide that, and it gets our story out and gets our, you know, their voices out and our position, you know, forwarded down the goal line. But
you can sign my mom up for that anytime, by the way. Just tell her Raz said you could do it.
Okay. Yeah, Raz, huh? Well, I'm glad to know that, because we're always looking, because I get calls like that from not just our elected officials, but elected officials around the state that will call and say, hey, I know that you know, the Waco Tea Party has a strong you know, homeschool coalition, because Becky, our secretary, used to be the secretary for Luigi, whatever, I can't say that. So they know that through her. Or if it's a school board thing, you know, our treasurer used to sit on the school board. And they'll say, hey, you know, Carol used to sit on the school board. Now they just call her directly. But it's like, do you know other people who are former school board members that can come talk about this? Or, you know, that kind of thing. And they know that we kind of have an index of that. When I say that, you know, be a resource, be valuable, it depends on what your goal is. And, it, you know, if your goal is just to kind of keep them accountable and that's it, then it's slightly different than if you're trying to kill or pass legislation as a citizen. I know citizens that don't have any formal groups, but they have a large network. And they're effective, too. But what they all have in common is that they know when to use a stick and when to use a carrot.
And one of the things that I realized, and we were discussing in a meeting this past weekend, was conservative activists are much more likely to wait around, and the establishment, leadership, the not conservative folks, whatever you want to call them, jump in really early with carrots. They're very active, and you just won your primary, and they show up with a nice welcome basket, and here's my cell phone, my wife's cell phone. If you need any help, call. And conservative groups sit back and pat themselves on the back and say, we got our guy into the primary. And it's an R+20 district. We're going to be fine. Instead of jumping in with the carrots, conservative groups sit back and wait until there's something that's done that's wrong and jump in with a bunch of sticks. And so you end up with folks that turn very quickly to the guys that they know are going to be nice to them. And the, you know, trying to figure out how to deal with people who break promises. You know, that there were some people who made the speaker's race a very vocal issue in their campaigns. There are some people who sat back and didn't really say anything. They weren't asked, and it was assumed how they were going to vote. There are others who made it, you know, very clear that they were not going to be supporting Turner. It is a very key vote. There are key pieces of legislation that will live or die in committee based on the speaker's vote, based on Strauss knowing that a lot of his power base is from the Democrats. Because if there was a way to get most of the Republicans to vote for anybody other than Strauss, then Strauss would either have to make sure all the Democrats were on his side, and then those, how many of those 11 Republicans are even still in the state house from that first vote? But it's a situation that you have to realize they might make some bad votes, but how can we work with them? How can we make sure that they get back on the straight and narrow? Or even, how can we work to find someone who they would vote for other than Strauss in the next speaker's election? Because that's something that's even more important to me than trying to find primary opponents for 127 different state house members. Is Scott Turner's an excellent man of character. He's got a great record. But instead of screaming, you know, pitchforks and our torches and trying to storm the Capitol to burn these guys out, walk up and say we're disappointed in your vote, who in the State House, other than Joe Strauss, would you support for leadership? And start building a coalition now to make sure that vote doesn't happen again. I'm not saying we shouldn't also be looking for some folks to primary these goons, but trying to build the rapport of this is under the bridge, we're looking forward. We're looking forward to the legislative cycle. We're looking forward to the next election cycle. And we're looking forward to the speaker's election. Because honestly, you know, even 6 years ago, nobody paid attention to the speaker's race. Nobody did. And as there was a swing to a Republican majority, it quickly became apparent that it wasn't enough to just be Republican, because being Republican did not mean being conservative. So instead of getting, you know, torches and pitchforks, let's sit down and visit with your member one-on-one after June or whatever the time is, but arrange to discuss with them what are the qualifications that you see have to be met. And having been speaker for 3 terms or 4 terms is not a qualifier. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that it's also like, you know, here, you know, people have said to us, well, you know, you got to get rid of Doc Anderson. And we've had this discussion, you know, we've been on both sides of Doc. And, you know, we've seen what stepped up to run against Doc. And, you know, Doc Anderson, now if you don't, I don't go by scorecards for any one organization because nobody scores 100% of legislation and I've seen too much of it cherry picked. So I just don't go by them. I look at the big picture of a lot of people's scorecards because that gives me a better picture. But the one that I look at in Texas the most is the Rice University scores. And the reason I look at those, because they score the most legislation, and they score it as did they vote with their caucus or not. And what, or, you know, was it conservative legislation or not? And it's not perfect, but I like to look at that because somebody who's voting for a lot of Democrat legislation versus Republican legislation, for me personally, that comes into play. I also look at things like constituent services, which I know a lot of people just don't care about, but we've had some really bad reps with constituent services because Doc doesn't have the whole county. And then we've had some with really good constituent services. And when you have things like that happen, like what happened in West with the explosion, something like that can turn someone from being kind of a C-plus into a B-minus because of how they handled it. And so, you know, I take a very big picture look at a rep. You know, who's running against them? Who's, you know, what kind of person are they? Where they come from? I just look at big picture. I'm not myopic. But, and I understand why most voters don't. You know that and I know that. But I tend to do that. You know, I don't give Doc or a pass or Bill Flores a pass. I just choose to say, okay, that was one thing, but I've got these other 99 that I agreed on. And is it worth throwing it out for someone who's less conservative, who is not going to work with the people, who has denigrated the Tea Parties or the grassroots or, you know, that kind of thing. I look at the big picture. And, you know, some of the names, like there was an activist that called our representative a jihadist terrorist over the weekend. That's not helpful. And doing it in the name of an organization is even less helpful because now you're taking everybody in that organization.
Just want to let you know we're down to the last 4 minutes of the show.
Okay. anyway, I think, you know, people have to be mindful. And Chris, what are some of the things that people could do that are positive when they do speak with reps?
It's a really long list. Inviting them, either being willing to put together a small meet and greet in your house. Granted, it's more difficult with, you know, when the legislature's in session, but inviting them to have, hey, buy a dinner, talk about the district. Invite them to a small group of your neighborhood watch. Write them a letter. The number of handwritten, you know, these are some issues that we're interested in, give me a call back. Those, you know, any vote that you can praise them on. The number of positive interactions that you can engage with your representative, whether even if it's just a retweet, whether it's sharing a congratulations on Facebook for their, you know, Representative Leach here a couple of months ago had a just gorgeous little baby. And I'm pretty sure it was Leach. And so it was on social media. So saying, you know, really excited for my representative. It's on social media. His page is going to show that. Hopefully they've got a staffer or even him personally, your representative personally, him or her, will be checking that. And you'd be surprised how that positive interaction is going to be refreshing to them, and it's going to make your name stick. I have not seen Sid Miller since the convention at the state convention after he won the nomination. Before that, it had been maybe a year and a half or 2 years since I'd seen him. Saw him, congratulated him at the state convention. And then at the reception before his swearing in, I was just standing there, and he walks by, and he took the time to lean in and shake my hand and say, thanks for coming. And it's because I've had positive interaction with him. He knows my family from positive interactions. And whether it's email, call saying thank you, handwritten letter, invitation to come over for dinner, hamburgers, come to the church, cookout, whatever. Any excuse for positive interaction is going to build your credibility with your representative.
And I think that's for any elected official. You know, here we do potluck and politics on occasion, which we're going to start back up again now that the legislative sessions, you know, we can start with local people like your DA or your school board, city council members, whoever it may be. And have them come in and listen to what concerns you and people in your group. And, you know, I think you're absolutely right. And I'll 100% truthful, honest here, we learned a lot of this from Raz and Chris over the years. Raz has been a mentor to us of being effective in politics. And we all don't always agree either. But that's okay. Civil discourse is fine. You know, just don't burn bridges that you may need somewhere down the line. It's kind of, I think, the best advice I can give people.
Well, thank you for letting me join in. And I understand the time is about to run out, but it's been great talking.
Yeah, and hey, come see us and tell us what you're up to sometime and come to a meeting and help spread the word. And we'll be glad to have you.
We'll work on setting that up this week, Toby.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. Bye.
So see, civil discussions is probably the best advice we can give everybody tonight. And don't show your boobies at the Capitol. We don't want to see your body parts.
I almost did that one time, but I'm glad I refrained.
Anyway, we hope you enjoyed the little civics lesson tonight and how to be effective. And we're going to keep doing things like this and get more specific as time goes on. So, Bobby, thanks for playing the switchboard and stuff tonight.
Sure, and thanks for joining me. Hope Jack gets better.
Thank you. And
feels
I hope
better.
That everybody has, yes. And everybody pay attention to the political process. There's some really good pieces of legislation that happened in the House, in Texas, in the U.S. And good night. God bless Texas. God bless America. And be safe out there.
That's right. We'll see you next time on the Wake Up TV. Yeah, sure.
Night, folks.